Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. And on this election day, when the results of many hard-won battles will soon be known, we're going to talk about unity. In fact, today and tomorrow at 11, we're going to listen to you about the power of community and culture. Wednesday at 11, we want to hear about the movie that exemplifies our shared experience as Americans, a film that reminds us of what binds us, not what separates us. So start to think about that, and we'll talk about it tomorrow at 11. Today, it's the power of food, of breaking bread together to unite us. Two guests and the dish that you would put on that communal table. Is it your grandma's hot dish? Is that powerful enough to overcome the divisions among your family and friends? Is it your mother's soul food? Is it nourishing and healing? Tell me why. Put a dish at the center of our communal table and join the conversation. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter. You've seen me retweeting this all morning, so I would love to see your dish. Maybe you've got a photo of it. Maybe you've got a great recipe. Share that on Twitter. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I. NPR. Our guest today, Lachelle Cunningham, is executive chef at Shell's Kitchen, formerly a chef at Breaking Bread Cafe. I mean, what could be better for this show? Lachelle, good to have you here.
Thanks
for coming. Musa Duale is the executive chef and manager at Afro Deli. He's also in the studio. Welcome, Musa. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Kitty.
Lachelle, the essence of the show is something that I think you've talked about quite a bit. I was reading an interview, I think, that you did with City Pages a while back, and you said, life can be painful to body and spirit, but we eat to comfort ourselves spiritually, culturally, psychologically. Add a little context to that.
Yeah, I mean, that is really my food philosophy. It's really around how food impacts us on every level. It's really the great equalizer for us to come together, like you said, and break bread together. And it has these healing properties that go beyond just the nourishing that happens in our body. Obviously, there's a lot of nourishment if you're eating the right foods that you can get out of food that can be healing to your body. But in addition to that, being able to break bread with people has its own healing component to it socially and culturally.
That's really what I want to get at here. Mm-hmm. What is it about sitting down around a table where you're going to, I guess, to some degree, put aside some of your differences? Mm-hmm. What do you think is warming and kind of healing about that?
Like I said, and I don't know who the quote comes from, but food being the great equalizer, it's that moment when you can sit down and it's just that basic human need that you're satisfying. But again, it's providing all of these other layers of nourishment, right? Just as an individual. But then when you share that experience with someone else, it becomes like this kind of magical thing that happens, you know, especially when the food is good, you know.
Musa, have you seen people gather around a table and suddenly, I don't know, where they came from or what they think or the opinions that they hold gets kind of put aside in some ways in the enjoyment of the food?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a true believer of the philosophy of, you know, using meals as a way to connect, as a way to socialize it. So in my little restaurant, I mean, you will see a lot of people, I mean, different backgrounds coming together and meeting for the first time, you know, saying, wow, you know, and enjoying it and having the same palates and saying, wow, this is what we're talking about. So I truly believe that.
Meeting for the first time, these are people that might,
different backgrounds, different backgrounds, different ethnic, different, you know, different social, background,
right?
So, and coming and enjoying the same meal and saying it's yours.
I would think that that's something that a restaurateur, that's your highest
yes
ethic,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
And having never run a restaurant, worked in plenty, but never run one, mm-hmm. what do you know when that's happening, Lichelle? Can you tell there's a certain alchemy in the air?
Yes, absolutely. There's definitely a certain atmosphere. There's a sound that it makes. There's the voices.
There's a sound.
There's a sound.
What's
there's
the sound?
The sound is the hum of the voices yes. and the hum of the clanking of the silverware, the pots and pans in the kitchen. And in the dining room, it's that hum of just the people enjoying each other and enjoying the food. It has like almost a certain hurts to it. I don't know what the tone,
say?
A frequency. Exactly.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
It definitely does.
You know what she's talking about?
Yes, 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 mm-hmm. yes,
absolutely. Yes, cool.
I mean, that is something I think that can either make or break a restaurant too, right? Absolutely. Whether there is this sense of community and kind of shared enjoyment
absolutely.
And collegiality,
absolutely.
Right? You don't want people, even though we might sit at our own tables, you don't want people kind of sitting there and enjoying in a sense of solitary
yes.
enjoyment.
Right? Absolutely.
Right. But you can't force that.
No.
You can't be like, look, talk to each other, people. Enjoy this together.
Well, you know, you can actually put some things in place. Like when at Breaking Bread, the tables were all set in long tables. So oftentimes people were in situations where they had to sit next to someone if the restaurant was packed.
Yeah.
They may have to sit next to one, maybe a little bit more cozier than they would like, and enjoy a meal. And most times... Mm-hmm. You end up somehow connecting. You notice something that's going on at the next table, or there's a conversation you overhear, and people just start talking to each other. It's beautiful.
Does that happen, Musa?
Yes, it does.
And I mean, again, you can't walk between the tables and be like, talk to each other.
Right. No,
that's
no.
what this is all about. So how do you make that happen?
Actually, with the dish itself, you know, when a person really liked that dish, he would, you know, invite the other person and say, I'm really tasting this dish. You know, can you take a bite on it? And you would see that in the restaurant more often than
absolutely.
You would.
Table to table or just within... Within the
group too.
You never
in the
know.
Group.
Really?
Yes,
within
yes.
the group, but you never, like you said, when you're sitting in close vicinity, and then my plate comes out and it's beautiful, and you start, you know, it gets the salivation going over here, and I'm looking at your plate, and I want to order that, and I'm like, what's that?
You
know,
that? Exactly.
Or if you're at the table, I want to taste it. You know,
right?
Or, you know, and so
it's
awesome.
I think it breaks down some of the Minnesota. We stick to ourselves. They're not going to like this when I say this, but I think maybe you guys know this. Although I know you've what fifth generation Minnesota family is that right?
Fourth.
Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. So you really understand the Minnesota culture. Mm-hmm, I find that it's a little. We're okay in ourselves here, and it's a little hard to be approachable. I think when you're new to Minnesota, food is a way to get past that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I could add it. You know, don't be little of the Minnesota spirit. They are really adventurous. They are way more adventurous than any other state I've been through.
What?
You know,
really?
Yes.
Adventurous.
Adventurous.
How
when
so?
When it came to the palate, when it came to the taste, they are really. They will try anything.
I will definitely second that.
Wow.
Yes.
Think about
yes.
the plethora of different kinds of restaurants that are in Minnesota and how that's grown in the last several years.
Yeah.
Different cultures, you know, and all the fusion that happens with food. I mean, that's huge in Minnesota and beyond, but you can definitely feel that. I mean, there are definitely some segregation and things like that among different cultures, but when it comes to going out to eat and things like that, you're going to see, especially with more... I would say global food, different types of global foods.
Right.
You'll definitely see more diversity in those types of restaurants.
I would second that again one more time. The thing is, you want to have it in New York City or L.A. or whatever.
I know. We tend to think that they're really ahead of the curve on the food scene.
Absolutely not. Minnesota.
And you know Minnesota leads in art.
Yes.
And food is art.
I know. Well, good point. Okay. If you've just tuned into the show, you hear us talking about food on this election day, and you're probably going, what gives? I thought it was going to be all about politics. We thought you needed a little bit of an adjustment here.
Please.
We're asking our guests. Right. And yeah, I heard you on Twitter too. We're asking our guests this morning, who are two chefs, about the food that you would put at the center of a table where you were bringing people together, kind of that common shared experience where your political differences, maybe the differences in where you come from, fall away and you gather around this table. What's the food? Oh my gosh, I had so many good answers on Twitter on this. What's the food that you would put in the middle of that table? Is it your grandma's hot dish? Because in some ways, that always made the whole family, even though we were fighting with each other, happy. Is it some recipe that has come down in your family for a long time? Is it something that you went to a restaurant, you stopped into the Afrodel, and you were like, everybody needs to know about this dish. What's the dish and why? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Carrie NPR, where Bridget says, I'm planning on making a venison veggie stew tonight with fresh venison from this weekend. I've been all about comfort food, mostly soup, these last weeks. Mm-hmm. Soups and stews, Lachelle? Yes. Oh, does that make sense to you?
Weekly for me. I make a big pot of soup.
What is it about? I know it's warming, but what else?
A couple of things. It's a way for me to use up like leftover ingredients in my refrigerator.
Yes.
And it's a way to pack a lot of nutrients into a dish that I can make, and then I can eat it throughout the week, and it doesn't degrade in its quality. Soup usually keeps up its quality. A lot of other foods will tend to degrade over time. After just a day or two,
yeah,
they don't taste the same. Soup usually gets better over time, soups and stews. So that's...
There's also this aesthetic of dipping right into the communal pot.
Yes.
You're dipping it in, you're pouring it out, mm-hmm. then it's going back in the fridge, then it's coming back out with, mm-hmm. right? There's something to that.
Absolutely. It's definitely an energy that happens when you're ladling up that stew and it's got all of that nutrients in there, and it's just, even the aroma, there's like aromatherapy, there's the steam coming off, there's the, you know, when you hand that bowl off to someone else that you served, you know, there's just, it's a whole other thing going on there. I love it.
Let me grab a call here from James in Plymouth. Hi, James.
Good morning.
Hey.
How are you?
Hi. Glad you called. What'd you want to say?
I'm calling. Musa used to have a restaurant beside our church, and we would often go there afterwards with our girls and have samosas with either hot tea or strong coffee. And while there, Musa, we would always discuss our children and how, regardless of our religion, we always want what's best for our family. It was a uniting conversation we could have that would, we're wanting the best for each other.
Is this the way you got the kids to church too?
Yeah. No. They actually came pretty willingly, but it was one of the favorites of going there after church and also engaging with Musa in conversation.
Tell me about the story of the restaurant, Musa. What is that? This is not Afrodeli, right?
It is Afrodeli.
Oh, it is Afrodeli.
It is Afrodeli.
Okay.
I mean, Afrodeli was always there. I mean, the thing is, me and my partner, we know, we had two different restaurants at the beginning,
Two
different palettes, two different styles. Yes, we started that way. But it was Afrodeli. And he's talking about the sambusas. I mean, I have a little joke about the sambusas, actually.
What did you say, sambusa?
Sambusa.
Okay, what
sambusa.
Is that?
Whoa.
Yeah.
See, that's what exactly what I was coming in.
Afrodeli now.
Exactly. Actually, that was, I was scared
that was
one
such
time.
Such a real reaction. Whoa. Are you kidding me? You don't know?
I was in a catering one time, and one of the guys said it to another one, what is a sambusa? And the other one looked at it and says, oh, you're not from Minnesota then, if you don't know sambusa.
Okay. I am not from Minnesota. I have never had a sambusa. What is it?
It's a little parfait, you know, a little dish, you know, we have the choice of veggies or, you know, beef, but the original one was the beef ones.
Yes.
It's the most popular one items
like
right now.
Like a savory pastry.
Okay,
pastries,
not like a samosa.
Every culture has their, like, dumpling, their fried dumpling.
Oh,
it's
kind of
like a empanada, samosa, sambusa. Mm-hmm. My favorite, I love making sambusas. I just made some.
Exactly.
I make them all the time.
Yep.
I'm hearing about a lot of dumplings on Twitter here. Mm-hmm. Sarah, one of my favorites is chocolate dumplings. Better a day later. I had somebody tweeting in about
say hi to the, you know, okay, to my friend Phyllis over there too. So.
All right.
what do you think it is? Oh, and here's somebody with corn chowder and dumplings. Here's somebody with wild rice soup and dumplings. What is it about dumplings?
Well, okay, so these are stuffed dumplings. A lot of times in the soups when they do dumplings, they may do like a puffed kind of like a dumpling that's made with flour and other like a leavening agent, like a baking soda or baking powder and some salt. And then the dumplings, there's other dumplings that are filled, like the empanadas, sambusas, samosas. Mm-hmm. And so those are two different things. One of them is more goes in the soup. The other one you can eat by itself as an appetizer or with the soup.
But what do you think it is about dumplings that's either comforting or...
Well, I was going to say two different things for each of them. So the one that goes in the soup is definitely comforting. It's filling. It's the way to get something filling in you while kind of filling up on a soup, because sometimes when you eat a soup, it's hard to, like, an hour later you're hungry again. So the dumplings help with the dumplings help with the filling, the flavor. They sop up the liquid in the stew and things like that. So that's what that's about, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then for the filled dumplings, those are like portable. Those are, you can take those and eat those anywhere. And for someone like me that is always on the run, sambusas are perfect because I can take them in my hand and I can go.
I would add this, easily, a snack, healthy snack, you know, and it's fulfilling too. You will eat one of those and you'll be good for the rest of the day, or between meals.
Yep. Here's Mallory who says, my mom's homemade macaroni and cheese and my uncle's ribs. My boyfriend and I are vegetarian 99% of the time, but we eat those ribs.
Yeah.
Okay, so I really thought we would hear from a lot of people who were going to share their family recipes here. Yeah, but we're not, which kind of surprises me. What
people
is it about?
Keep those sacred, I think. So
we talked about your multiple generation roots in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. What are some of the recipes that have come down through your family that you would say?
I would say that we're definitely kind of more have a traditional family. So at holidays and things like that, it's always, the collard greens is really a big one on our family. Sweet potato pies. My mom is about pound cake. She makes pound cakes for pretty much everything. And she's the best pound cake.
She brings a pound cake to family gathering.
Yeah, usually. And people call her like, are you going to make that pound cake? And then my mom taught me and my cousin how to make peach cobbler. Now my cousin is the best peach cobbler in the family.
That would smooth over any difference I was having with anybody if you showed up with peach cobbler and pound cakes. I'm not kidding.
I know. I seem to know a lot of people that don't like peaches, though, for some reason.
What?
So. I know.
Who are these people?
I know, right?
They must be native Minnesotans. Musa, how about the family recipes that... When you know you're gathering together a lot of people with maybe, I don't know, a lot of differences, what's the recipe that is sure to kind of lay a sense of comfort over everybody's experience?
I would say mostly, we have all the same dishes, especially where I came from, We all have the same family dish, but the trick is how we prepare it and how we marinate that dish before even we serve it.
Okay, give me an example.
Example, the most popular one, would be the goat.
The goat?
Yes, the goat. A big goat, plate on the, and everybody came in and they getting all around that plate.
Wow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the difference actually, we'll say, between families, an example, me, and my friend house, we'll say, he used that kind of ingredient. He used that kind of spice with his goat.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different flavors.
Right.
So you could tell where that person is from, actually. Depends on what spice they use.
Really?
What spice, or what ingredient they're using along with their goat. So you can determine, that's from that region. Oh, this is from this household. Or this is. So it's a little signature you can tell. But
is a goat in a celebratory kind of food?
Yes,
so
it
when
is.
You bring out the goat with whatever it's been marinated with, you are saying something about the family experience.
Absolutely.
What are you saying?
Most, I would say, let's get together first of all. This is our favorite dish. This is our one we come in. And everybody say, he's preparing goat. So that means something special is going on tonight.
Uh-huh.
There is something, off the charts going on today. So I will be part of that celebration. Yes.
Lachelle, is there a food like that for you where it's a traditional that a kind of tradition that signals to the family something special is happening here, or we've all been through this together and now it's a moment to relax and enjoy each other?
You know, we have so many different foods in my family, and what we've done lately actually is kind of gotten away from, like, I think last winter holiday, Christmas, we did crab legs. So we just kind of switched it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I would say gumbo is actually one of those dishes for
perfect.
Our family.
Yeah.
Is the gumbo. And the cook I am, or the chef I am, I always like to do something different. That's really what my signature is I always, and people ask me, well, what's your favorite dish to make? It's always something different. I always want to do something new. And so I'm actually doing a vegan gumbo this
Whoa.
Week. And people will say that and they're like, what are you talking about? Vegan gumbo?
I know.
That doesn't even make
Why?
Sense.
Why?
Why? Is because I teach a class around nutritional healing and it celebrates plant-based eating. And I wanted to bring a really great recipe that was delicious. And I actually went up to a event at Chef Camp this past summer and taught my class there. And we made the vegan gumbo, and it was the favorite dish of the whole
wow.
weekend. For a lot of people came to me and said that.
You have to give me some details on the recipe here.
Right.
After
okay.
I take a couple calls.
All right.
To Mitch in Minneapolis. Hey, Mitch. Hi.
Hi. So I wanted to bring up the issue of lutefisk suppers.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm glad you're bringing up the issue of
the
lutefisk.
Issue.
No, it's a great issue. So I'm from Minnesota, born and raised. So my husband is from India.
Wow, yeah.
And he's a really adventurous eater. And so it's like, do you want to check out a lutefisk supper?
Oh my
and he,
gosh, why?
He loves it.
That
He loved
there?
It?
No, there is nothing to love about lutefisk. Mitch, I don't believe it. No
what?
Way. No.
You're sitting at a table with like eight strangers, and everybody is just sharing in the whole lutefisk experience. And the lefse is served communally, and everybody's raving about the meatballs. And it's such a happy and warm communal environment with people eating together. It's beautiful.
It is. You are right. It is the perfect example. If it only wasn't lutefisk at the center of that, because I've been to churches where they're serving lutefisk for the church supper, and you're exactly right. There's a real communal sense of it, and it is quintessentially Scandinavian. But Mitch, how you got your husband from India to love lutefisk, I will never know. I mean, what was the secret to that?
There is no secret. It's just a lovely way to prepare fish.
All right.
Yeah, right. If I could add to that.
Yes.
You ever had it, you know, four or five people start trying the lutefisk for the first time together? That's a great experience having
is
on their
it?
It is, seriously, just looking at
Why?
Their face.
All right, I'm booking my lutefisk dinner ticket. Who's coming with me?
Have you had it?
I feel like I had it a long time ago, but I don't. I'm going to have to say no.
It's a fish.
But I feel like I did, or I was invited
like
to have it.
Steeped
but
in lie or something crazy
no,
like
it
that.
Is,
I feel like someone might have brought it to a potluck or something.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah. There is a really great restaurant in the Northeast Minneapolis who make it, you know.
That makes lutefisk the way it's meant
to be. I can't recall it. It's on university and Laurie, I think. Not
it
easy,
also
you know.
Seems
okay,
like really gelatinous, but,
oh.
you know,
yes.
in the best sense, I
no,
guess.
No, I think I probably would have remembered lutefisk if I had it then, right?
Keith says on Twitter, tacos, who doesn't love tacos?
Oh, my God. Yeah, those are my favorite.
And then he adds, stop this conversation. I'm already starving.
I know,
at least
too.
Political talk kills my appetite. Here's Diane, who says, a big pot of pho. I think that's perfect,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yes.
I mean,
that's healed. That is like,
you can't.
Cured. That's like a cure-all.
You cannot dislike each other. You cannot have right. differences, I think, around
mm-hmm.
a big pot of pho,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Right.
And
absolutely.
You're right. Minnesotans took to that like there was no tomorrow. Almost as
yeah. With Mitch, you know, and his husband is, you know, from India.
Yes.
Adding some curry on the lutefisk, you know?
What?
Come on.
Oh,
adding
fusion.
The fusions on the
Oh, we got a fusion lutefisk dish. Okay.
You tuned in and you were like, why aren't they talking about politics? Because
We've talked about politics 24/7, and we wanted to take a break. And I'm asking you this morning to think about maybe it is that family recipe that you bring to the table because you're done with the difference. You're done with the arguing about politics, and you've decided you want to bring everybody together, friends and family together, and just have kind of this communal sense of an experience around food. What's the food that you would put in the middle of that table? Family recipe, some new dish that you love, lutefisk because there's no explanation. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Brenda in St. Paul. Hey, Brenda. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
No problem. Two words, deviled eggs.
That's brilliant.
Deviled eggs, I have learned, are an incredible crowd pleaser.
Yes.
I think because they don't show up on every picnic table or tailgate party, or you can bring them to Easter brunch, and they fit in everywhere. Mm-hmm. And unlike like a secret family recipe, they're pretty basic. Like people can eat it and go, oh, this tastes like my mom's or my grandma's deviled eggs. Mm-hmm. Unlike potato salad, which, oh my goodness, God bless my mother-in-law, but the first time I tasted her potato salad, German, like, I was like, why is this warm? Why are there red potatoes in it? Like, people have a very specific, like, some are savory, some are sweet. The kind you buy at Lunds and Byerly's has more of that vinegar, kind of sugary sweet. So it's a crowd pleaser because it kind of meets everybody's palate needs. And like the someone was saying before about their cousin being the peach cobbler queen, it's sort of a traditional thing. Like it's old school enough, like May Day baskets or teaching my daughter to embroider a dish towel.
Oh my gosh, you should be hosting this show, Brenda.
It's kind of so perfect. It evokes like, oh my gosh, you know, it's unique enough that people, it triggers a memory and a conversation, no matter if you're in a group of people you don't know. So, you know, my daughter has become the deviled egg queen. She's only 14 years old, but she has taken that over, like the peach cobbler princess or whoever it was. And then the other thing I just want to throw out, and this is so off topic and it's not super positive or pleasant, but everything you're talking about, you know, the nutritional healing and coming together as a community or a family and celebrating around food, how do you recreate that? My father-in-law was dying of cancer about 10, 15 years ago, and he was on a feeding tube, and this was a large Polish family, you know, with like 10 kids, and everything was anchored in food. And then all of a sudden, he couldn't eat anymore, and it was like everyone felt self-conscious. It's like, all you know, how can you recreate that kind of magic without it being the focus?
It's a really good.
Because you do realize how many celebrations are completely focused on food first.
Brenda, I'm so glad you called. A great question and really good with the deviled eggs. So, Lachelle, what would you say about when it's so often about food and somebody can't participate, but you really want to recreate that sense of comfort and family connection? What would you say? That's a tough one.
I mean, the food is definitely a piece of it, but it's not the end-all be-all of what can bring families together. I think just being together, you know, needs to be the focus of it. And the food is a benefit of that, and is a medium of that. But just being able to share stories, learn about the past, tell those stories. A lot of time in my family, we play games. We play board games and things like that. Yeah. So that's something that you can come together just to play a board game, or you can come together for any reason. I mean, let's find excuses why. And a lot of times it's definitely going to be food involved, but that doesn't need to be the excuse. We can find excuses. We can find a reason to do anything, right?
Musa, I also heard what Brenda was saying about how the experience of sitting down with a dish, maybe you're gathered with people that aren't even your family, but there is something about some foods that trigger that childhood experience. And I'm thinking about family members who come from somewhere else, and they're bringing those memories and maybe some of those recipes with them, and how valuable that is, right, to be able to recreate that.
I would say mostly it's the aroma, you know,
yeah.
the aroma, you know, it's the smell, it's the scents. Coming up, I mean, even you will have, you know, visitors outside of the restaurant and they smell the food and they will say, hmm, what is that? And they will came in as a curiosity and says, what are you were cooking? Because I was smelling all day and I was walking there. And and the aroma, I will say, I mean, for this, you know, Brenda, is getting together, it's like Vision was saying so well, you know, and bringing those food, even if the person cannot eat, he will trigger, those aromas will trigger good memories and good, you know, souvenirs.
Something really fragrant.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. Right. The Willmar Art Department tweeted in and said, in Willmar at work, people always get excited for sambusa, tamales, and Norwegian baked goods at Christmas with our potlucks. We're a very diverse school.
Yes.
And our December potluck or fundraisers, you see those a lot.
Nice.
I'd like to drop in for that.
Yes.
I love that.
We'll get a look at the latest news here when we come back. More of your foods that you would put into the middle of a table that's all about, I don't know, sharing comfort, right? Pushing away some of the differences that we've been so invested in for the last, I don't know, year and a half, forever. What's the dish that comes from your family? What's the dish you love to share that really, what? It encourages thinking about good childhood memories. It encourages comfort and collegiality. Tell me the story of that food. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Hey, if you want to tweet a photo of the food, oh man, I am retweeting those right and left, and I'll get to the many, many tweets here. Back to our conversation, LaShelle Cunningham with us, executive chef at Shell's Kitchen, and Musa Duale is the executive chef and manager at Afro Deli. On Twitter, Aaron says, thanks for the uplifting, sweet, savory, warming segment on communal foods on this particular day. I just want to hug you and your lovely guests.
Aww.
Another listener says, my mom makes this wicked, delicious continental chicken that makes me borderline weep tears of joy when she makes it. It's chicken wrapped in bacon and dried beef, cooked in a crock pot with cream of chicken soup and sour cream for 8 hours. It's a hug on a plate. You know, there is something to this thing of what you said earlier, LaShelle, about the soup. Just letting the flavors blend and anticipation for hours on end, right? And then bringing that to the table and being like, I didn't whip this up 20 minutes ago.
Right.
I've been anticipating your arrival, right, for 8 hours. There's something to that.
Absolutely. I think that's the like the beauty of the crock pot or the slow cooking pot.
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
Right. Like, I've been waiting for you, and it's important to me that you arrived. Am I putting too much on this, Musa?
No, you're doing good, actually.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thank you.
I've been preparing,
yes,
you know?
Yes,
right.
Yes,
preparing
yes.
a place.
I mean, even getting all the... Like I would say, I mean, even in the commercial part, you know, forget the family, getting the marinade stuff overnight or, you know, getting, you know, your meat and even your spice, you know, overnight or even 2 days ahead, you know, just making sure when they came out, they would be perfect.
Your special, and I've been,
yes.
and I've been working towards this. Yeah. Call here from Nicole in Pillager. Hey, Nicole. Hi.
Hi. Hey, the caller that spoke about when her father-in-law was dying and had the feeding tube really resonated with me. My dad died 8 years ago, and we're also one of those families where food is the center of everything. And the last 2 days he was at home, he was in a coma, and my mom was in the kitchen baking cookies because she wanted him to be able to smell his favorite food, which is just a memory that I hold really dear. In fact, a cousin just brought it up to me, and she said, you know, I will always remember coming by to say goodbye and smelling cookies and just, you know, the sight and the sound and the feel, mom in the kitchen clacking the pans in her apron. It's just, so there's comfort in not just the eating of it, but the preparing of it too.
This is what you're also talking about, Nicole, is also the ritual, right? That there's a familiarity in that ritual and everybody can kind of experience that again. Are there rituals in your family around food, Musa? I mean,
definitely, yes. You know, there is a lot of ritual. The one I will recall right now is how would I say that, you know, coming in at home and having mama, you know, mama in there and saying, yes, everybody sit down, everybody calm down, and getting together, mm-hmm. just bringing everybody. Oh, we're missing that person. We got to wait for that person before we can start the food until that person came in. It's
Did your mother eat with the family, or was your mother one of those mothers that shelled out the food and then was that she would wait until her loved ones had eaten? Sometimes that's a case in a traditional family.
Yes. I mean, but she would be the first one, you know, on the table. Ah. She would be the first one on the table and saying, directing on the prime seat and saying, everybody.
Okay. Got that. I hear that. Chrissy says, tater tot hot dish is a staple in my family. It's the best comfort food. It can also be prepared so many different ways. I make mine with green beans and a lot of gooey cheese. Mm. What's not to love about that, Michelle?
Ooh,
I mean,
that
really. To Kate in Cold Spring. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Hot dish is the one that I wanted to talk about as well. Every year in November, my husband and I host a Central Minnesota potluck, hot dish potluck.
Nice.
I'm a sixth generation Minnesotan, but he's from California. We both worked at universities where most of our friends were transplants from other states. So to me, the most familiar thing is a potluck, you know, at church or 4-H club, where everyone brings hot dish or some kind of a salad that has Jello or Cool Whip or mayonnaise or pieces of a cookie in it.
That's great.
And bars. So when we host this potluck, we invite all of our friends. We tell them to bring something in one of those categories, and we have this truly Central Minnesota experience from the good old days.
So do the same.
A great way to have that kind of that shared experience with each other.
Katie, do the same people show up, or do you find that new people are showing up and joining in the tradition?
Many of the same people still come. We kind of max out the space that we have in our home.
Yeah.
We're having it this weekend. We're expecting about 50 people.
You say 5-0?
Really can't invite any more than that. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is great.
It's such a fun thing to do with each other. And every year, we always take a little poll for the little vote for the best hot dish, the best salad, the best bars. And I always find old school church cookbooks to give away as the prizes. I know a lot of people use those to brainstorm for the next year.
I know. I've got one, too, that's been passed down in my family. Lachelle, do you have a church cookbook that has made it into any of the recipes that you make for the restaurant? I mean, the church ladies, you know, they know they're cooking.
Well, not necessarily a cookbook, but definitely recipes.
Okay, like what?
Banana pudding would be the one that I can think of that my mom got from her best friend's mom. I'm sorry. My mom's best friend's mom.
Okay, wait a minute. Your mom's best friend's mother used to make this banana pudding.
Correct.
What's unique about it?
I don't know if it's a traditional banana pudding recipe. It's actually one of the first dishes I learned how to make. But think about banana pudding. It's technically under the soul food category,
yeah.
But it's a French technique. You're making custard and meringue. Those are French cooking techniques, right?
Do you serve it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like right now? That sounds so good.
Of course. I do one where I actually make vanilla wafers with black eyed pea flour.
And of course, I
have a vegan version. So I do black eyed pea flours. It's gluten free. Yes. And it's black eyed pea flour. And then I make cookies with it. And people love it. They love it.
Wow.
When it's made right, and we make a coconut custard.
What everybody doesn't know is off air when we were during the news break, Lachelle said to Musa, is Afro Deli open right now?
Yes.
I'm going over there. Going over there right after we're done. To Bonnie in Scandia. Hey, Bonnie. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
What's the food for you?
Well, I grew up on a farm in Scandia, and my mother was probably one of the best cooks around. But one of the things that she had that could comfort anyone would be an old-fashioned recipe called hamburger soup.
No.
Hamburger soup.
Of course, growing up on a farm, you have the good beef, good pork, but one of the best things in it, it always has bacon. And lots of vegetables, lots of homegrown tomatoes that have been canned or made into soup. You add that with it. And I think that as I was sitting here listening to the show, I'm doing the apple bars right now as I'm listening.
Oh, yummy.
Which is the accompaniment afterwards.
Right.
And, of course, always homemade bread.
Mm,
but
sounds
what
wonderful.
I have noticed through the years is that coming from a small town, we still tend to get together. Our family's large, and we do still get together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But people are really busy today. And so there isn't necessarily hosting of these big gatherings. People tend to go out, or they will bring things in. These are just different traditions that are being started because of the way people, a lot of people, have to live today.
However,
I would recommend that any time you want to really be comforted, make your own food at home.
Yes. Wait a minute, you're talking to two restaurateurs here.
Yes,
Musa, how do you feel about that?
It's the best, I mean, it's the best healthy ways, actually, to eat.
To eat at home?
To eat at home.
To make it at home.
Yes,
is it?
Home. It is.
Yes.
It is, no matter how.
Why?
Did you know what you put in it?
Not only that, it's you adding the little love into
it.
You're adding the little fresh ingredients. You're adding, you know, the best ingredients you can find it because you know you're feeding, you know, your loved ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in commercial parts, yes, we're trying to do that, but we got to go with the food cost. You got to go with the, you know, all the other stuff. But when you're cooking at home, you got the best cuts. You, you bring in the best of you. You know, you bring in the best of everything. So it's the healthiest way, I would say.
Yes.
You work on a plant-based, I mean, you're trying to create a lot of different foods that are plant-based, right?
Correct.
Which is you taking some traditional, I don't know, what, southern food, soul food, and putting a plant-based
anything
spin
I
on
can.
It?
Southern food, soul food, global food. I do a lot of global, different global cuisine, pretty much from every corner I can get my hands on. And I like to, I mean, a lot of dishes are already vegan and plant-based, but I take it as a personal challenge to try to create a vegan version of a lot of dishes that you, especially the ones where you're like, what?
That's what I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. So the greatest challenge in transforming, let's just say, a food that's really important to your family and your customers at the restaurant that you've put a vegan spin on.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Was a challenge. What was it?
Absolutely. Oh, one
like
that
the gumbo
I've done?
Or?
Oh, I've done a lot of them. You know, to me, it's kind of like alchemy. You know, when you can kind of take these ingredients that are raw, in a raw, pure form and change them into something beautiful. Some of the dishes that I've done, so I like to center on some specific African indigenous ingredients, yams, black eyed peas, what was the other ones? I'm drawing a blank, greens. And so I like to do different things. So I've done a few dinners where I celebrated yams. And so I did like a yam ramen. I made ramen noodles with yams. And then I did kind of a Japanese Thai kind of broth. So it was a fusion there. I've done, tortilla shells with yams and made tacos. I have a ice cream that I do that's called, Yammy Tammy. And that's with yams and tamarind in the ice cream.
Well,
and tamarind
good.
Is also an African indigenous ingredient.
Wow.
And so I love to do a lot of that. I love to make Berber spice and
cool.
do a lot of different, do a lot of different spices with that. Those are just some of the things. The black eyed pea, black eyed pea pudding, banana pudding, excuse me.
Okay.
I take collard greens and I'll do a raw collard green wrap. And so you're getting a bunch of raw veggies in there instead of just the stewed collard greens.
That's
and different
really, that sounds
like
really
that,
good.
So. It does.
Yeah, on my side, I mean, I don't need to make the, you know, something special. I'm just trying to bring my old, you know, recipes and introduce to Minnesota and introduce to that in
your
sense.
In your family, who is the keeper of the family recipes? I mean, has it become you or is there?
Oh, no. No, you're way far
what, like
from
a,
me.
Like a grandmother or?
No, that would be my big sister, actually. She's the one, my older sister. She's the one who has all the recipes. She was the one who, by heart, she doesn't even need to write it. She will come in and she will smell that food and say,
Does she live here?
I love that.
Does she live here?
No, she doesn't live here. She lives in Canada, so,
On Twitter, who doesn't like chocolate cake? A blue ribbon winner at the state fair this year. Enjoy. Sure, I'll share the recipe. Alex says, my mom's family makes custard-based Dakota Kuchen, a very German-Russian tradition. bringing one out of the freezer a few weeks later and having everyone dive for a slice has become a family tradition of its own. Wow, really nice. To Jeremy in Minneapolis. Hi, Jeremy. What's your story?
Hello. Just want to talk about how, like, I've one overall love this conversation during this time.
I'm glad.
But growing up, I'm a first generation Mexican American, so I was born and raised in Little Italy, the Bronx. Just growing up eating tamales during every Christmas is something that, like, I remembered and can still taste without even having it in my mouth. So moving out over here, you know, like, I've had to make it on my own. The sad thing about that is that when I was in the Bronx, everybody had their role. Every family member pitched in to make tamales. Now that I do it alone, it's anywhere from like 4 hours. You know, like, kind of having a family assembly line to produce this really great dish and then eat it together. And kind of the little kicker about our family was we grew up in Little Italy, the Bronx, and my brothers came over with my mom when she immigrated. And my mom makes lasagna every single Christmas as well and Thanksgiving. And I asked her why, and she said, well, the brothers wanted Italian food. You know, I never knew how to make it, and then I had to make it. And so, you know, they wanted pasta, so I made them pasta. So, you know, growing up, I love tamales, pozole, all these traditional Mexican dishes, but I still crave chicken parm.
Isn't that funny?
I love that.
Okay, so Jeremy, I think I get it with the family assembly line and how traditional that is to creating this meal, but you have to recreate that. Now that you're out here by yourself, you know, I think you should just recreate that with your friends. Possible?
It's happening. It's happened. It's I've had my friends actually come over and teach them how to roll tamales.
Good.
How to make the sauces and how to, you know, get everything ready just so it's actually successful. And
good.
Kind of, you know, so it's and it's actually one of the hardest things I did last year was make a vegan tamale, which
ooh,
was really hard because it includes lard and, and normally meat. It's something I want to actually get better at. So
what'd you use for your fat?
Probably the worst thing, so like Crisco and I definitely use Crisco and coconut oil.
Yep, that's what I use was coconut oil.
And
yeah,
how did
coconut
it
oil.
How did it go, Jeremy?
It came out well, I think. I just want more flavor out of it. Mm-hmm. I definitely want to use heavier seasonings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I find what you're saying very inspiring. Your mother sounds like a great and nimble cook, and the fact that you're carrying that on is really cool. What were you going to say, Lachelle?
I was going to say I actually did that this summer. I actually still have tamales in my freezer from this summer, smoked chicken tamales, and I've been making these tamale stews. So if anyone hears me that knows me, they're going to be like, "Oh, you have more?" Because they love this tamale stew, but
you
I made
brought them, you know.
Yeah, well, they're frozen. But the vegan tamales, we did that as well with jackfruit, and it did the first couple batches, it was like, "Oh, this is not enough flavor," even though we taste the individual components. When we put them together, something with the steam or something, and so we had to kind of like adjust the seasonings, definitely, so I can
love
relate to
how experimental
saying.
You are.
Oh yeah,
that's the nature of it.
Yes.
Hey, Amy on Twitter here says, thanks for having the vegan chef on your program. Tell her I have a great vegan tater tot hot dish recipe for her.
Oh, please do tell.
Can't get enough tater tots.
Right,
what's with that?
I have
what
to have my
that?
Tater tots crispy.
What?
They've got to be crispy for me. I can't deal with the soggy tater tot. That's my only. But tater tots, that's definitely a Minnesota
I know.
Deal with the hot dish. But just tater tots in themselves, the memory that brings back for me is elementary school and having the little tater tots on your little tray and thinking you were, you know,
okay.
getting something great.
Musa, you said that Minnesotans are adventurous eaters, mm-hmm. but I want to know if you've managed to work the tater tot into any of the dishes on the menu.
Challenge!
At Afro Deli. Have
not
you?
Yet. Not yet,
what?
But coming soon. Coming soon.
Yeah, right?
Exciting
really?
Today, yes.
Some kind of special marinated.
Let me know if you want any help with that recipe creation.
I will take on that, yes.
Coming hey, really, really good to have you guys here.
Awesome.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For coming.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow morning at 11, yes, another respite for this 24/7 political season that we've had. And we're going to talk about the films, the movies, watching something together that unites us. So this is Collard Greens and Cornbread by Fantasia. I told you that I was through, but today I'm with you.
And that's love. This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.